There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that...
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. Phone number, text line 343-0106. Mobile County Commissioner, District 3, Jerry Carl, our guest in studio. Okay, here's a question. These are the kind of questions I get, and usually I have to say I don't know, but I could frame it to you. It says from Rita on the text line, "Hey, Sean, couldn't that homeowner get with the county to get a hydrant placed within the area to help improve that fire rating down from a 10.
The county does not put in water. The water in different areas is going to be different sources. So, for example, the water lines, most all the water lines inside the city of Mobile are actually owned by malls.
Right. But in the county, I mean, a lot of people would be on wells, and right?
Right there on wells, but and there's water services out there, and it takes water services are expensive to run. We will help some of the water companies get grants that are needed.
Okay.
Sometimes for especially sewage, but that's private companies.
So could, and I wonder, these are, this is probably something you don't have an answer to. I'm just wondering stuff like Rita was, could, if I'm in that homeowner situation, can I as a private citizen buy a fire hydrant, have it connected to my well, and have it green lighted to tell a, you know, so for my insurance rating that I've got?
I really doubt it, because it's got to have a certain pressure rating.
Yeah, and there's a lot more to it, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more to it than that, and that's over my pay scale.
Hey,
too.
Me too. All right, let's go to Earl in Mobile. You're on with Jerry Carl.
Hey, Jerry, Sean, look, to say the people in the jurisdiction don't pay taxes, they live right across the street from Walmart on Cylinders Road. They're right across the street. They'll pay full city sales tax when they go to the store. And then the jurisdiction pays a 2% jurisdictional sales tax on top of the regular county tax to the city for police and fire.
But they don't
to
pay the property
they don't
tax.
Pay anything. Yeah, no, the property taxes, no. But the sales tax is what's...
Yeah, and we were just talking about that. You're talking about that.
Yeah. The city for the minimal amount of service, life safety.
But I would argue
it's called abandonment, and it should be against the law. What he's doing should be criminal, and the state's allowing him to do it. It should be criminal. It's called abandonment.
Abandonment.
EMT cannot start taking care of a patient, walk away. That's called abandonment.
So, but one of the questions.
He took care of these communities, Sean.
Earl.
He's taken care of them since they annexed Schillinger's and Rangeline. He's getting their money, and he don't want to give them any services for it. And the state and the county has allowed him to do it.
Well, what about, so if the people are, you're saying, because the people on this, they're not paying the property tax, but you're saying they're paying the sales tax, but I mean, play devil's advocate.
The jurisdictional sales tax, which is 2% more on top of the regular county tax. And then, like I said, right across the street is Walmart. I'm talking about right across the street. He don't want to run over there in the neighborhood, but when they need groceries or they need something, they go across the street to Walmart and buy it and pay.
So what should be? So what would be the fair deal here? What deal would work best in your mind?
They need to leave it alone. Leave it the way it is. It's there for a.
What about somebody like me? But hold on. Do you live in the county or the city?
I'm nowhere. Mobile's never served my resident. I just feel bad. I think the people that are right across the street from the city limit line are getting screwed.
Well, Earl, so help me. So I live in the city. So I'm paying that sales tax, right? Just like you're saying the people are coming across. So I pay that sales tax. I pay the property tax. I do all that stuff inside the city. Why should you get
and
those
you
same...
Get trash, Earl, garbage, Earl. And you get full city services. These people in the jurisdiction don't get full services.
Yeah, but they get fire, police.
Fire and police, man.
Right. So should I get, at what rate is that equal? You see what I'm saying? At what rate do I feel like as a citizen I'm paying X, somebody in the county is paying X minus something? At what point are we equal?
Well, what they should do now is when he pulls everything back into the city limit, the people need to quit spending their money in Mobile. They need to quit buying things in the city.
But Earl, they're buying stuff at the Walmart not because they want to pay taxes to help carry their freight. They're buying stuff at the Walmart because they want stuff. They want stuff.
And Sam Jones got it all. Now, you go get Darby Creek, which is a rich neighborhood, and only because, they didn't make but three runs, EMS runs in this neighborhood, look at their property taxes. Oh, well, we'll make money. Well, what about them poor neighborhoods, Sean? We don't want the poor people. We don't want them.
Well, you heard what I said yesterday.
This is an elderly neighborhood, Sean. They called the ambulance 10 times last month. We don't want the old people. Give us the rich houses. We'll accept them, but we're not running across the street to those folks. That sounds legit to me, and the state's allowing them to do this.
There we go. There's Earl's take on it. One of the things here that I think you heard it yesterday or 2 days ago when City Councilman John Williams said, he said, don't expect a Darby Creek situation at every point. He said the city has to break even or make money on these deals. So I think there's something to be. I mean, it may be tough if you're living right outside the city, but what's the city's responsibility? I think that's a fair question. Do they have a responsibility beyond what is happening currently or what's projected to happen? What is their responsibility to somebody who lives inside that jurisdiction? All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Coming up at about 1:35, right in there, we'll start talking with AG Steve Marshall. And there are a bunch of things to talk about. Number one, National Crime Victims Rights Week. Plus, what's going on with the Pardon and Parole Board? I don't know if you've been following that whole talk about where it was, but even before Governor Ivey stepped in and where it is now, reform to that that's been put into the legislature. We'll see where that's going. We talked about that with District Attorney Ashley Rich, last week as well. We'll talk about that. Also, this ethics law legislation. This is interesting as it's been put on ice. We'll get the take from the AG on this. And the story that I really want to dig into, because it seems like it's history repeating itself again, as Attorney General Marshall's office raided two, what were they, charity bingo halls? Bingo. This state, I love my state, but my God, we need to either do it or don't do it. When it comes to gambling and we're going to get to drinking in a second. Either do it or don't do it. It's such a ridiculous patchwork carve out. Either you do it or you don't do it. But so the raid here on these electronic bingo halls up in Jefferson County, what is the law? What is the law? I mean, how is it like every few years we're either letting things happen or we're cracking down on them? I mean, I just want to know what the law is, right? Is that fair? All right, and we'll get to this ABC story in just a second, because this is one that has come up before, and now this has been shot down again in Montgomery, and I want to run through this. But before I do, I need to tell you this. Caller number 6-343-0106. Caller number 6-343-0106. Now, what's that all about? Well, I got a pair of tickets for you for the Quality Time tour from Jim Gaffigan coming to the Wharf Amphitheater. He's great. He's a clean but funny comedian. Often those two things don't happen at the same time, but Jim's one of those that can do it. Grammy-nominated comedian, actor, writer, producer, two-time New York Times bestselling author, top touring performer, and multi-platinum selling father of five. He is going to be at the Wharf Amphitheater Saturday, May 11th, 7:30. Is this not a good time? I mean, it's on a Saturday, and it's not in the middle of the night. It's perfect. Doors open at 6, show at 7:30. Tickets on sale now, Ticketmaster.com or at the Wharf box office. And get your tickets now, and hopefully, if you're caller number 6, you just got a pair by calling 343-0106. A pair of tickets. A pair of tickets. All right, so this is back. This is the Arthur Orr do away with some the retail portion of the ABC bill. Now, this bill has been brought up. We have talked about this time and time again. But let me point out, we are not halfway. I don't think we hit the... we're not even on the back nine of regular session now in Montgomery. And this has been shot down again. This is one that just... You would talk about how deep the ruts are, how deep the ruts are, and how the things that we've always done, and we've always done them that way in Alabama, and we're not going to question that, how deep those ruts run. This is one of those stories. Okay, so Senator Arthur Orr has brought this bill up before. This year it was SB 77. The numbers changed, but the story is still the same. The bill to privatize liquor sales rejected in Senate committee. Didn't even make it for a floor vote. Got shot down in committee. SB 77. Now, here's a story for our news partners at WKRG. SB 77, State Senator Arthur Orr's bill to phase in the privatization of liquor retail sales in Alabama, failed to advance from a Senate committee yesterday morning. Five members of the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development voted to give the bill a favorable report. Six opposed it. Let me go back to the name of this committee. Okay, the name of the committee, it is the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development. Can I repeat that again? Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development. Six voted no and didn't let it out of committee, the idea of getting the state of Alabama out of the booze business. During the public hearing, I added that part. That wasn't in the KRG story. Now back to their story. During a public hearing immediately before the vote, representatives of ABC, Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, and Alabama State Employees Association and Alabama Citizens Action Program spoke against the bill. Of course they did. They all have dogs in the hunt. Senator Orr argued the state should not be competing against the private sector. Once again, I pointed out, if this was hamburgers and not liquor, people would say, what are y'all doing? In other words, if let's say it was hamburgers. Say you're in the private business of selling hamburgers, delicious hamburgers and french fries and all those things. But first, you would have to, there'd be a state hamburger store, right? We'll call it Bama Burgers. Bama Burgers is there, and you can buy your combo at Bama Burgers for cheaper because the private entities would have to buy at the price of Bama Burger offers to a retail market. They would have to buy the burgers and then plus them up to sell them to us. So, of course, you would go to Bama Burgers and buy them. But no, we're talking about booze here, right? So this is a holdover from the old days when this whole system was even more crooked. And I'll point out, I don't think the individuals working at ABC stores are crooked. I don't. And I don't think the people working at the ABC statewide are crooked. I think they have a reason to try to protect their jobs, but I don't think they're crooked. There are some parts of this system, and I'll point that out in a second here, that I think are crooked. So Senator Orr argued that the state should not be competing against the private sector. The bill stipulates that the ABC board would phase out its involvement in retail sales by October 1st of 2024. ABC's non-retail functions, including regulation, would not be affected. Can we get that in like 20-point font and bold and maybe even make it red if you want to? Because a lot of the disinformation campaign that has come out against this bill each year has been the, if this is done, the kids will be drinking, there'll be people drunk in the streets. Those are lies. The bill, every time it's been brought up, has said the ability of ABC to make sure minors aren't drinking, to enforce liquor laws, to even collect the excise tax on the booze coming into the state, those would all still remain. It would get the state out of the business of having storefronts selling booze. Goes on to say in the story, SB 77 also provides for severance pay, preferential treatment, and other benefits for displaced ABC retail employees. And I think there's 600 and something last time we checked. 680, something like that. However, two opponents focused on these employees losing their state jobs during their remarks to the committee. Can I go back and point out the name of the committee? That would be the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development. Okay, just wanted to go back to that. Arthur Orr has introduced a variation of this legislation for several consecutive years. However, this year's bill was said to be the simplest of the lot. A separate bill is expected to be soon introduced in the House that would alter the tax structure for liquor wholesale and retail. So there you go. So I want to get into this. Number one, I don't think, and even though I've, you know, had my conversations with people from ABC, I don't, that disagree with me and, you know, or weren't real happy about me opening my mouth all these years, I don't think they're bad people. I don't think they're bad people. I think they're people that are doing what they can to protect their jobs. I get that. At the same time, as a citizen, I got to tell you what I think, and I think that's not the business the state should be in. I do want to point out, if you hear somebody telling you if the ABC, if these, like SB 77 passed, there'd be no regulation on drinking for minors and all that, that's baloney. It's baloney. It's not true. This would get the state to phase out by 2024. I don't know Senator Arthur Orr. Don't know him. Don't know him. Don't hang out with him. Don't go fishing with him. I'm actually been opposed to a lot of things he's done. I mean, during the BP money issue. So it's not even like I'm jumping on board and saying, rah, rah, rah. Way to go, Senator Orr. I'm saying this bill is right. And so you have a situation where you have retail distribution of liquor, right? The price is better at the ABC store than the privately owned store. But that's the way it is. I mean, if you realize that the system is built to give the ABC store the absolute advantage. A liquor store should be a private enterprise. People risk capital. Some win, some lose. But in the state of Alabama and other states, but state of Alabama, we've got the state in the same business. To what end? What is this the job of state government? Is the job of state, I mean, if we're going to define, and people always say, we need to cut, they're wasting, and then the government's too big. How is this not the lowest hanging fruit of the government's too big fruit tree? How is it not? And when I said, I don't believe the people are crooked, but the part of the system is, I'll point out one part of the system. And one part of the system that set up the ABC retail thing is that the state can't own the facilities, can't own the real estate that the ABC store is in. Oh, this will make people mad. I know, I'm probably going to get a nasty email. Sorry, y'all. This is the truth. Even though the state has property that they're sitting on, they can't put an ABC store in there because they have to rent space for those stores. Well, don't you imagine across the state, if you're somebody who has the right kind of building for ABC stores, you sure would be inclined to help back up these groups and keep this system in place, wouldn't you? So you have that regular rent money coming from the state. Once again, I understand the employees' unions and all that with the state trying to defend their own jobs. I get it. That doesn't mean I have to say it's right, because it's not. And for Arthur Orr's bill, Senator Orr's bill, not to even make it out of the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development is laughable. Is laughable. All right, take some phone calls and text now. 343-0106, 343-0106. Got that out of my system. Yeah, there's a lot of good text here on this. You're not getting tax. If you think you're getting tax money back, believe me, they do think it's important, though. Have you ever noticed when we have, like, state government shutdown, we get an ice storm or snow or whatever, and they'll say, you know, all these offices for the state of Alabama are closed, but the ABC stores are still open. All right. David in Mobile up first.
Two quick points, Sean. First, on the employees losing their jobs. First of all of these state employees that work at ABC stores and the wholesale side of the ABC distribution network are all state employees, all entitled to an RSA retirement.
That's right, big retirements, yes.
That retirement bubble is coming down the line, so while the stores and the wholesale distribution is profitable now, they won't be once the retirees
That's a good pragmatic approach to it, because that part of it, I mean, there's a pragmatic approach like you're talking about and an idealistic approach of what is the state doing in the business of selling booze.
Exactly. And then the second quick point is this. If you got the state out of the wholesale business, which is basically a taxpayer-funded business incentive mm-hmm. benefit to liquor companies, these liquor companies that sell liquor would have to go establish their own distribution networks, which would probably end up creating more than the 600 jobs that would be lost by the state, because it's not going to be a single source like it is now that would get the distribution contracts. It would be multiple distributors that would get those contracts. So would need to hire more.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's like maybe something that would be of interest to the Committee on Economic Development. Maybe. Thanks, David. So go to Bill in Mobile. Hey, Bill.
Hey, I think being in the state, being in the liquor business is the stupidest thing. It's costing the taxpayers money year after year after year, and it's just crazy.
Well, and it's if they were selling hamburgers, Bill, people would be up in arms, right? I mean, if you had to compete against a state hamburger stand.
Yeah, I've been saying it for years. It makes no sense for the state to be in the liquor business. You know, paying all those salaries to all those employees, they could still make the same money off the tax. It's still taxed. Somebody else is just collecting it for them.
Yeah, you know,
we're paying retirement for all these people. We, you know, get them other jobs. You know, they could do other things for the state, but it's just crazy.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I'm with you. And once again, let me point out, I guess my frustration comes from the fact that here before we even made the turn and played the second nine, the back nine in this legislative session, Senator Orr's bill doesn't even make it out of committee. Wow. All right, coming back, Attorney General Steve Marshall joins us right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
135 FM Talk 106.5. And congratulations, Ashley Lawrence in Loosedale, checking in from Mississippi. Thank you, thank you. She just won that pair of tickets to go check out Jim Gaffigan. That show coming up at the Wharf Amphitheater, May 11th. Tickets on sale now, Ticketmaster.com or at the Wharf box office. And he's one of those guys that combines the two worlds. In other words, he's clean. He's a clean comedian. And sometimes there's clean comedians that aren't the funniest. I mean, there have been some great ones over time. But you get a guy like Jim Gaffigan, he's like incredibly funny, and it's a family style show. So it's good stuff. Not saying he's not going to say something that might leave you going, did he just say that? But it's a clean show. You can take the kids to it, and it's a good time. Or like the wife and I might choose to leave the kids at home and do something without children. That'll be nice. All right. I mentioned right before we went to the news there, be joined by Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall. He's joining us now. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. You know, you talk about Jim Gaffigan, it makes me think of his Hot Pockets jokes. Yeah, I can't tell you, I mean, I ate over those over the years, but they kept me nourished.
And burn the top of your mouth at levels that you can't
absolutely
have to have reconstructive
surgery. And we bought them again. Hey, that's not why you have me here, but thanks for having me on.
Hey, I want to talk to you about a couple things. Number one, the overall with National Crime Victims Rights Week. I was talking to Ashley Rich, district attorney, about this. From your take at a state level, let's talk about this week and what it means.
Well, I think it's important, number one, that we highlight the fact that victims, not only what they have endured or suffered as a result of what's going on to one of their loved ones, but that also that as a country and as a state that we say that we're going to stand up and be their voice in courtrooms and we're seeking justice. And, you know, Ashley has been so proactive, and especially, and I hope we can talk about it a little bit, the work that we're trying to do with Board of Pardon and Paroles and trying to reform that system. But the good thing about this week is that we get to, for at least a short period of time, focus on those families and victims that have suffered and to again remind them that we support them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do want to talk about the Alabama Pardons and Parole Boards. And if you'll do folks a favor, because we've talked about it a couple times, but I think this is still not kitchen table material here in Alabama. What was the situation? Let's go back to even before the governor stepped in on this. Explain how this was working, or better yet, not working.
Yeah, a couple things I think gave rise to really where we are today. One, we began to be aware from VOCAL, which is our crime victims advocacy group, as well as prosecutors around the state, that we're sharing information that the parole board was beginning to deviate from their own rules and calling violent offenders up for parole early. You know, Ashley Rich and I and others that have been doing this for a long time, that when we sat down with families and cases were resolved or else somebody had been convicted of a crime in which parole was eligible, that if it was a Class A offense, so our most serious offenses, we were able to share with them that the rules of the parole board were that no parole could even be considered, whether it be the expiration of 85% of their sentence or 15 years, whichever came first. And we began to hear stories of violent criminals with life sentences coming up for parole after 7, 8, 9 years, and that was simply not right. And then I think you and I have talked about as well the second aspect of this, and that's the case involving a man by the name of Jimmy Spencer, who had had a life sentence, was a violent criminal, had 90-plus infractions while he was in the Department of Corrections, was paroled to a halfway house and a shelter, not to a facility operated by the state. He stays there only a few days. no effort is made to be able to apprehend him or put him back in custody. He ends up having interaction with law enforcement. Again, no effort by the parole board to put him back in jail. And he ends up killing three people in my home county of Marshall County, two of which I knew well. And so that's when began discussions with the governor. She and I had a meeting with the parole board that, frankly, was unsatisfactory. That caused her initial executive order to be in place about a moratorium on the board violating their rules and going forward with some of these violent offenders, and then allowed us to begin to examine the situation, which caused us, and I'm grateful for the fact that Governor Ivey has given me the ability to take the lead on legislation that I testified about yesterday in the Senate, and look forward to ultimately becoming law.
Yeah, and kind of what will the pardon and parole board look like if that is passed?
Yeah, I think it's going to be dramatically different, and especially as it relates to how it operates. You know, number one, that is an entity that's accountable to no one, because the board itself had oversight of the agency. They chose their director, and it really was outside of the executive branch, outside of the legislative branch, and other than funding that came from the legislature, there was nobody that they had to answer to. And again, I think that's wrong. This bill would allow for the governor to be able to appoint the head of that agency, which again gives direct accountability for what goes on and how that agency operates to the governor, who is our chief magistrate by statute. Then we would allow that board to just simply work on what I think they ought to be doing, which is the day-to-day consideration of who ought to be released. You know, it may be not noticeable to a lot of people when they read our bill, and maybe they don't think it's important, but we included a provision that said that it is one of the paramount duties of that board is to operate and consider public safety as a paramount concern. And the reason for that is when we met with the parole board that first time, the governor asked them very pointedly, what do you think your responsibilities are? Or what do you think your role is? And one of the parole board members said, it's our job to make sure the prisons aren't overcrowded. And Sean, that's not their responsibility.
Right.
Their responsibility is to make sure that anybody they release, they have some assurance that that person is not going to endanger public safety, and the public ought to have confidence in those decisions. Now, will everybody that gets released no longer offend through the criminal laws again? No, and nobody can give anybody that promise. But yet, when you see somebody like Jimmy Spencer, who clearly should have not been released, and what he did, that's inexcusable. And so we've made those structural changes. We've also requested that one of the parole board members have 10 years or more in law enforcement experience, which we think is a good perspective for somebody evaluating who ought to be released. We are going to codify, and this is put in statute, some of the regulations that they were not adhering to, and that's including what I talked about earlier about the length of time before somebody can be considered for parole, especially when they've committed a violent offense. And we think that structurally these are things that will allow us to be able to move forward and, again, maybe develop confidence in the decisions that board's making.
Yeah, it's something that, to be frank with you, I can't speak for everybody, but I hadn't thought of before the governor stepped in. Before that, I thought the kind of things you said, I figured it was people that were from law enforcement or something else. I figured there were certain directives, and if they weren't doing right, we could, you know, vote them out or something like that. It was an eye-opener to me when that story came out.
They clearly, we have no oversight. And I would encourage, not that looking at the AG's Facebook page is something that you want to do every day, but we post a video. And you know, Ashley Rich, who's been a friend for a long time and is a true champion for victims, gives a very impassioned statement as to why these changes are important, because she sees it day-to-day in Mobile when, you know, folks that we know we've sent to prison that were problems in the community are literally being turned out quickly. That's problematic. And so these are changes we hope to be able to make. And again, I'm very grateful for Ashley's support of what we're trying to do.
I talk about something from here at home, but it is actually the subject of national news today, and that is death row inmate Christopher Lee Price scheduled for execution tonight.
Yes, you know, he killed a minister right outside his home, and that's why he's on death row. He's been there for almost 25 years, I believe. Right now, that case is pending on a petition for cert by Mr. Price to ask for his sentence to be delayed. The appeal was rejected at both the U.S. District Court as well as the 11th Circuit. We actually are filing probably by the time that we get off the phone our response to that cert petition that was filed just before lunch. We still expect the execution to go off tonight, and we'll be able to talk to that family afterwards to know that not only the jury's recommendation, but the judge's sentence is finally carried out.
Now, what about the nuance here on the method of execution and the question, I guess now you could choose death by nitrogen gas in the state?
Yeah, last year the legislature passed a bill that would allow for nitrogen hypoxia to be one of the approved methods for execution. And by statute, the legislature required us to give notice to all death row inmates to give them 30 days to be able to select if they wanted to allow nitrogen hypoxia to be that method as opposed to lethal injection. Mr. Price was given the opportunity to make that election. He chose not to. And now, at the last hour, he is having a change of heart and says that he would now like to make that election. Again, we see that as simply a delay tactic and not a meritorious reason to delay justice being found tonight.
Is there, I mean, the kind of just away from this specific case, but the question around this, it seems from the outside, there's like a catch-22 here that you can choose to have death by nitrogen hypoxia, like you said, but because it's never been, has it never been implemented? I mean, anywhere in the states? I mean, is that the...
It's definitely not been in Alabama. We've actually been working with the state of Arkansas, who passed the law before us, because there's a couple things that we have to do before we can begin using it. One is which is to have a fully vetted protocol that sort of speaks to the process in which the execution would take place through that method, and then actually what it is that we would use to be able to perform the execution. And so I know the Department of Corrections is working on both of those issues. I'm sure we'll be litigating that as well. They'll argue, defendants will, that that's cruel and unusual, and we'll have to have experts testify in front of a federal judge. But we're working with some of our neighbors that likewise have passed a similar bill to try to come up with the plan and the proposal here for the state.
All right. Coming right back with Attorney General Steve Marshall, because a couple other things, well, there's a whole bunch of things, but we'll probably have time for a few more with him talking about this question about the ethics law legislation that I talked about at the beginning of the show. Get into that, and you know I've been wanting to ask him all week long about the raids in Jefferson County. We'll get to that and a whole lot more when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 148 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Remember, check out podcasts of this show and the 40-some-odd hours a week of live local programming we do by going to fmtalk1065.com and clicking on the podcast tab. They're all waiting for you right there. Plus, you can subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher, Spotify, and TuneIn Radio. All right, continuing our conversation with Attorney General of the state of Alabama, Steve Marshall. Thanks for being on with us this afternoon. And what about, this is something you and I have talked about before, ethics legislation in the state, but help me understand what has happened today. I mean, a couple years ago, there's sweeping ethics reform, and now there's a change to the sweeping ethics reform that was good and is going to do what? Help me understand.
I think it's going to do several things. It's kind of ironic in some ways the timing of the discussion, in that we filed our brief in the My Covered case this week, in which we spoke specifically about the 2010 ethics laws that were heralded as some of the strongest in the nation, and there to deter and find those that would engage in corrupt behavior. And it's interesting that, you know, the sponsor and the one that really championed that bill, Mike Hubbard, you know, is the one that was ultimately convicted in Lee County. And so one of the things that conviction shows us is, number one, that the law works. You know, we had the jury in Lee County bring that conviction. We've had the Court of Criminal Appeals, except for one count in which they reversed, but all the other counts they upheld. And what I think that court decision did, and what I believe the Alabama Supreme Court will say, is that our laws not only provide clarity for those who are seeking to know what conduct is legal or illegal, but also the fact that they are constitutional. And so the effort that has been discussed this week, Senator Albritton, who is from down in your neck of the woods, who, again, I think is a very good lawyer, just simply wants to take a very different approach, that rather than making certain conduct criminal, and specifically I would highlight relating to things given to public officials by lobbyists and others, rather than make some of those actions criminal, he simply wants those to be disclosures, so that, you know, if a lobbyist bought, for example, if John Solomon was in the legislature and he took you out for a $100 meal, then we're depending on that lobbyist to identify that $100 meal and a filing that the public could look at and make a decision whether or not to keep him in office. We think, although that approach, I understand why he wants to do it, would hamper our ability to effectively deter criminal behavior, more particularly corrupt behavior, and that and it relates to several of the investigations we have ongoing now, would really hamper our ability to use the law effectively, I think, for what the people of Alabama want us to do.
I hear, though, that this is so broad, so far-reaching right now as it stands with the ethics law that one-fifth of the people of Alabama fall under this, you know, that they would be somebody who could be questioned, right? Because they're in the development business or something like that.
Yeah, I think, and also because of the definition of family, you know, in part of what the ethics law applies to and who is subject to the conduct are the family members of public officials and public employees, which goes to beyond children, siblings, to in-laws and others. And I think that's one of the things that we looked at this summer when we were a part of the ethics group that was examining and trying to make recommendations to the legislature. And I do think that everybody in that room recognize that maybe we need to consider the definition of family being not quite as broad, but yet what we've seen through this legislation is, I think, going too far in the other direction. And I know from our office's perspective, and I've also heard this from the Ethics Commission, that we believe will hamper our ability to effectively deter corrupt behavior in the state.
You mentioned the Hubbard trial, and I'll point out to folks that may be surprised by this still that Mike Hubbard's not yet gone to jail, correct? I mean, he has not served any time.
Yeah, he is. And I will say this, he's not being treated any differently than any other defendant that would be similarly situated. He's posted an appeal bond. He was eligible for an appeal bond. And so what is simply keeping him from serving the sentence that was ordered by the judge in Lee County is for his appeals to be exhausted. The Court of Criminal Appeals has rendered their decision. Now the defendant, Mr. Hubbard, has 14 days from Monday to be able to file his brief. We'll see whether or not the Supreme Court does oral arguments, but at that point in time, it'll be in the court's hands to render their decision and for us to know the ultimate fate of Mr. Hubbard, whether or not he's going to prison or not. We believe that we presented a very compelling case, that the jury and Lee County got it right, and we expect the Supreme Court to affirm what we've done.
All right. I always say, at least to me, the best or the most interesting to be to last. You're probably going to shake your head. Come on, Sultan.
That's all right.
But so two raids this week in Jefferson County on whatever the semantics are, charity bingo halls or whatever the accurate term is by your office. What was going on the day you raided versus days before? Did the law change? Did your understanding of what they were doing change? Help me understand what is legal, what is not legal.
All right. First of all, it's actually one raid, Sean, and it was on four different facilities.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, you hear this moniker of electronic bingo or charity bingo. What was going on there is a smaller level casino with slot machines. I mean, that's simply what's there. The Alabama Supreme Court has been abundantly clear at this point to say that bingo is played on a card against other people in a traditional way that you and I have always known it. And yet people are attempting to somehow or another grasp through the use of technology this idea that what is really a slot machine is somehow or another the ability to play bingo, not on a card, but on a machine. And over seven different decisions, the court has come back and been clear. And there was none of this in Jefferson County until recently when a sheriff there said, although he understood it was illegal, that he didn't want to enforce the law. It's been publicly reported that his brother was one of those who was seeking a permit to be able to do it, which I think is a clear conflict of interest.
Yeah.
I think the public can realize that. But you had the one of the district attorneys where three of these facilities were say publicly that they should cease and desist because the conduct itself was illegal, but she said she didn't have the ability to enforce that cease and desist. What we have is ongoing criminal investigations, which resulted partly in the execution of those search warrants on those facilities, and we seized records, which are very important for us in this investigation. We seized over 1,100 machines, and also money that was at those facilities, and these investigations are ongoing. Yeah, the one thing that I would say, Sean, that probably gets missed in this is not, even during the campaign, that all you want to do is stop elderly people from being able to go play a game of fun. That's not it at all. What we do know, and I think what has been proven in this state, is that there are multiple criminal aspects that go along with the rise of gambling. You look no further than in our history in Phoenix City and what happened to an attorney general that was very strong at that point to say he was going to shut down illegal activity, ultimately loses his life, and loses his life at the hands of those in government who were shielding those who were engaged in criminal behavior. You know, y'all have an attorney general that is elected to enforce the law. And that is the responsibility that I accepted when I took that oath. And so when we see in Jefferson County the failure to enforce what is a clear violation, then we had no other alternative as part of our ongoing investigation than to stop that illegal activity. I mean, we went from no machines that we were aware of to over 1,000 in less than a six-week period. And but for, I believe, us stepping in as we did this week, that illegal activity would have grown, and not only would it have been an issue in Jefferson County, but somebody's going to argue, well, why can't I do it in Mobile County? Why right. can't I do it in Baldwin County when it is a clear violation of our Constitution? You know, the good thing is that we have a representative democracy. They get a chance to decide in the legislature whether or not we change the policy of this state. But right now, these are illegal games. They are games of chance. And not authorized under our law.
And that's, I mean, from my perspective, I don't have a dog in the hunt, but I don't really care. It doesn't, I will, you know, I will continue to argue, as I have for a decade, that the societal ills that come with gambling already come back home into Alabama from other states. So I don't think we're on an island can avoid that. So let's move forward. But what does bother me as a citizen is when I think the law is this, and then it's not, like, what did you say? The sheriff there said he just was not going to enforce that law?
He wasn't going to enforce it. Felt like that he just disclaimed it as a priority, said, that it was a misdemeanor, that he just didn't feel like that was where his focus needed to be, which, again, was just a green light to those who wanted to engage in criminal behavior to go forward. You know, I'll give you another example. Let's assume that you have a local prosecutor that simply says, I really don't agree with the laws of the state of Alabama on marijuana, and I'm just going to allow for recreational marijuana to take place, although the legislature has never endorsed that. It's the same concept. It basically has taken what is our structure of government being one in which the executive branch enforces the law and the legislature makes the law, to vest within the executive branch the ability basically to decide what the law is. It's the same example that, you know, you and I have talked about a little bit with sanctuary cities, where we have a clear responsibility for law enforcement and others to work on our immigration laws, but yet, especially in outside of Alabama, you have cities that say, we're going to disregard what federal immigration laws are, we're not going to allow you to enforce orders and to become this safe haven. We are a nation of laws. We need to enforce them, and this happens to be in a situation in which illegal gambling is involved.
Is history repeating itself all over again here? You got a warehouse with all those machines in them now?
They are seized, and they're there waiting for us to be able to file our forfeiture action.
There we go. Attorney General Steve Marshall, is always a pleasure talking. Hopefully you'll come back on with us soon.
Look forward to seeing you in studio, Sean. Thank you.
All right. Steve Marshall joining us right here on Midday Mobile, and we're wrapping it up. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. And remember, check us out online, fmtalk1065.com, on Facebook, facebook.com/fmtalk1065. Also check us out on Twitter and Instagram. We're waiting for you, so come see us. All right. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great one. Talk to you in the morning.